Have you ever heard a musical artist described as having great chops? What does that mean? Well, the term chops is slang in the music business that refers to an artist that has developed great skills over time, whether they are a musician, composer, producer, or other titles associated with the music business. This is Scott Grimaldi, your host of Got Chops. Join me as I interview one musical artist per episode that I've had the pleasure of either performing, recording, or work with in my career. Plus, I'll be interviewing artists I've always wanted to speak with. We'll discover how each artist developed their chops, listen to their stories, and much more. This is Got Chops. My special guest artist for today is a vocalist that has been described as an old soul at only 24 years old. He came to national attention when he performed on one of PBS-TV's Coast to Coast broadcast specials, and since then has toured the country, breathing new life into the songs of the 60s and 70s by stripping them down and reimagining them in his own style. My guest has headlined in Las Vegas 11 times, released four albums in 2021, featuring masterful arrangements by Charles Colello, and his Facebook page reached over 60 million people last year. In 2022, my guest released a Christmas album that also features a duet with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Darlene Love, thus landing their live performance on the TV show Good Morning America, and others. This vocalist certainly got chops. Please welcome Chris Ruggiero. Hi, Chris. This is Scott from Got Chops. How are you?
Hi, Scott. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great as well. Thanks so much. On the phone right now, calling from Florida, is my special guest artist for today, vocalist Chris Ruggiero. Chris, allow me to tell my audience a little bit about you before I begin the interview.
Sure.
So, for the past few years now, I've been one of Chris's backing musicians when he performs on the East Coast. He has been described as an old soul at only 24 years old who came to national attention when he performed in concert on one of the PBS-TV's Coast to Coast broadcast specials. We're going to talk about that experience and so much more on today's episode of Got Chops. Chris, once again, thank you so much for granting me this time and this interview. I'm looking so forward to our conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you.
As a vocalist, what does the music slang Got Chops mean to you?
Well, you know, I've heard it a bunch of times backstage, you know, that person, they got the chops. They got chops. And actually, Bobby Rydell used to say that all the time when we were backstage together at our shows. And to me, it means that the person's got it. You know, they got a good voice, strong voice, and they got what it takes.
I agree. So when was the first time you recall hearing of the slang term?
Oh, man, I would have to think, but I probably have known it my whole life. I guess I've heard my grandfather say it as well, talking about, you know, great doo-wop singers and Sinatra saying, They got chops. They had chops, you know.
Do you know where it originated from?
No, I'd love to know.
Well, it really came out of the turn of the century. It referred to brass players and their lips, you know. And as you know, when you have a trumpet or trombone player on stage or a whole section of brass players, it's a different pressure than it is when you're playing woodwinds. Not to say that woodwinds are much easier to play, But that's where it came from. So they called their lips chops, and then all of a sudden, all the other musicians that played woodwinds especially adopted that slang term, and then all other musicians have adopted it as well.
Oh, wow. Well, look at that. I learn something new every day.
We all do.
Yes.
So I know that you currently live in Florida, but you were born and raised in New York, correct?
Yes, exactly. I grew up in a small town in Westchester, New York called Somers. And I lived there my entire life, all the way through high school and college. And then recently moved to Florida, actually, exactly a year ago this month.
Wow.
So it's been a year since I've been here in Florida, in South Florida, and I love it. But I'm not here all the time because, of course, I'm traveling, doing shows. So I feel like I live in all different places because I travel so much. But that's okay because I love every place I go to, and I love every theater that I play in.
That's great. And you have fans all over the place, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. So let me ask you, what was the pivotal moment in your life you knew that you were going to become a vocalist? In your shows, you refer to your grandfather as your inspiration, and you just mentioned Bobby Rydell. I'm assuming he is also another inspirational person.
Oh, sure. Well, when I was about 12 years old, I was in my grandfather's car, and he actually had on Larry Chance's CD. Now, Larry Chance just passed a few days ago, of course, so this really hits home for me. But he was playing that CD in the car, and that was the first time I ever heard music of the 50s on that CD that Larry Chance made. And I said to my grandpa, I said, What is this? What are we listening to? And he said, that's my friend Larry. And I said, what is this music? You know, I never heard it before. And he said, this is what I grew up on. This is real music. And so I went home and I downloaded every song I could possibly find. You know, it was a digital discovery for me because we have computers, of course, nowadays. And I went and I downloaded every song from the 50s and 60s, doo-wop songs, you know, by Larry Chance and the Earls, the Duprees, Bobby Rydell, the Skyliners, the Flamingos, and on and on and on. And that's how I fell in love with this kind of music. And then the real pivotal moment when I said this is what I want to do is was actually a few years after my PBS special that I did. So I did that special when I was 18. TJ Lubinsky invited me to come down to Asbury Park, New Jersey, to be a part of this show, which I thought was just a rock and roll show, just a regular rock and roll doo-wop show. I had no idea that it was being filmed. I don't know if I didn't hear them tell me or what, but I had no idea. So I got to the theater and there were cameras all over the place, a million cameras. And then they told me that this whole thing, of course, was being televised, and that I was singing a song with the Duprees. And that was my very first time on stage. And a few years after that, you know, I started doing more and more shows right after that aired. And then I met my producer and manager, Joe Mirioni. And at the time, I didn't know that I could be a singer, to tell you the truth. I thought that you had to have a big hit record to be a singer and be on stage. And Joe told me that that's not true. There are plenty singers that and entertainers and comedians who didn't have big hits and stuff and totally made a career out of singing, entertaining, doing whatever it is that they did. And so we started working together. It's 3 years now, and we've been attached to the hip since for the last 3 years. And so 3 years ago was really when I decided this is what I want to do, and I'm going to give it a shot. And thank God I have Joe at my side because he's the best producer manager that any singer could ask for. I'll tell you that.
Oh, absolutely. And I've been around the scene a little bit longer than you. I don't want to tell you how long, but I can certainly vouch for that. I mean, and I'm sure you've observed how he's running around just to make sure that every little thing is happening on time at the right place. And you're very fortunate because I've seen others in his same position that are not as dedicated, and it's like, oh, you know, been there, done that, and the artists are very, very, you know, frustrated. So you're very fortunate to have him. He is a great guy also. Let me circle back a little bit more. Bobby Rydell. I mean, I've worked with Bobby for years, and so have you. Could you please share with my audience who Bobby Rydell was?
Sure. Well, you know, when I like to tell people about Bobby, I tell them that he's basically the Justin Bieber of the 1960s.
That's right.
Know, that's, to me, is the perfect description. He was a great singer, great looking. All the girls love Bobby.
That's right.
And just the personality was everything on top. That was like the icing on the cake. Bobby was never, even till the end, was never the kind of guy who was snooty or stuck up or acted like he knew what he was doing, because he's been around forever and had so many hit records. He was just a street kid his whole life. He never grew up. Even his last show that he did, that we were on together, he was a kid. He's a 20-year-old inside of a 80-year-old man's body, you know?
That's right.
And that's what so many people loved about him, was that playfulness that he had. And all the great songs. I mean, he had so many good songs, you know, Wildwood Days and Kissin' Time and Cha 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 and Volare and on and on. I think my favorite song is Wildwood Days. I don't know though; it always changes.
So let me ask you: did you begin singing in school at an early age, and were you a member of any school choirs?
Well, you know, I remember being forced to go to the school choir concerts and stuff that we'd have during school, and all the kids would go. And I remember saying, oh, you know, I would like to do that, but my voice sounds like a girl's. When I was younger, and I'm talking about way younger, my voice, it sounded really girly. It was really high pitched. And so I was always afraid to sing because I didn't want people to make fun of me. And not that I even knew that I could sing or anything, but whenever we did sing in choir class, I just didn't like the way I sounded. And so years and years later in high school, I was actually asked to sing because we were doing a high school rock and roll show for the Lions Club. And I was part of the men's choir that my teacher forced me to be a part of, that I didn't want to be in because, again, I was nervous and just didn't want to be in it. But I did it anyway. And of course, last minute for this rock and roll show, the men's choir was supposed to perform a couple of songs, and a few kids backed out. So now we're half the amount of people that are supposed to do this song, and we can't do it. So they said, well, Chris, can you sing? And I said, well, you know, I don't know, not really. I don't know. They said, well, we got to fill in time here. We don't have enough time for this show. Can you do a song? And so I said, okay. So I did the song Diana by Paul Anka. And that was it. After that, I was hooked on being on stage and making people smile. I definitely was hooked on that like a drug, and that's why I love it so much. For me, it's not even the singing. It's just looking out and seeing people so happy. I just love that.
And you can still remember it in your head, and you refer back to it, I'm sure, sometimes when you're on stage, like, oh, that's why I'm here.
That I think about it every time I hit the stage. That's why I'm here.
Oh, that's great. So were you formally trained as a vocalist, or are you self-taught?
Self-taught, to tell you the truth, all the way up until about a year ago, when I started taking some vocal lessons from my vocal coach, Bucky Hurd of the Righteous Brothers.
Oh, wow.
So, he works with Bill Medley, of course, and he sings all the Bobby Hatfield parts.
Wow, that's great. Excellent.
Yeah, and he's a great teacher, so he's helped me a lot.
Yeah, and that helps, especially with phrasing and technique, and, you know, you start to appreciate little things like that after a while.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bucky helped a lot with, you know, hitting the higher notes, because he sings a lot of Journey stuff, and all the Bobby Hatfield stuff is way up in the sky as well. And so he was great at that, and then I had and still have another coach for the phrasing and the storytelling of the songs. And that's Clint Holmes, who lives out in Vegas. And actually Joe Marioni, my producer and manager, introduced me to Clint a few years back. And that was the greatest introduction of my life, because that changed everything between Clint and Joe, you know, really making me tell the story of the song as opposed to just singing the song. You know, we would go over, why are you singing it? who are you singing it to? What are they wearing? Where are you? And those were all the things that I would think about when I was learning a song and singing it for the very first time. So that helped a tremendous amount.
That's fantastic. Let's go back a little bit and talk about that, your first PBS TV appearance and what artists you performed with. And I understand that there wasn't any rehearsal for this event, and you were only 18 years old, as you said.
Exactly. And yes, there was no rehearsal. The taping was 2 days long. If I remember, it started at like 12 in the afternoon, and it didn't end until 3 o'clock in the morning. Both days. It went like overtime, and which is fine with me. I love singing and I love listening to the stuff, but I was the only act on the show that didn't get a rehearsal with the group that I sang with. And I was the only one that really needed it because I had never sung on stage before with a live band in my entire life. And I was singing with the Duprees. I sang their number one hit, you know, You Belong to Me, which was one of my favorite songs growing up. And they're my favorite group. So it was like so surreal that I was sharing the stage with them, and not even by request, that the producer, TJ Lubinsky, just happened to pair us together. And it was like a match made in heaven, you know?
Wow, that's amazing. Now, for my audience, you've got to check this PBS TV appearance out. You cannot tell that, you know, that didn't happen and that's your first time because you have a natural ability. And then it just got better and better and better from there. The Duprees, I've worked with them on and off for many years, and you know how big they are and how successful. So, wow, what a great pairing for the both of you. That's terrific.
That was amazing. It was a great experience for sure.
So the majority of your repertoire is composed of songs that were hits in the 1960s and 70s. I read a quote that says, "Chris breathes new life into these songs by stripping them down and reimagining them in his own style." So what is it about the music of the 60s and early 70s that has such broad appeal, even to people in their 20s who weren't around when these songs were played on the radio?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have an incredible sense of nostalgia for it all, and I wasn't even around then. But these songs are really timeless because the lyrics and the melodies are timeless. They talk about falling in love and being in love, losing love. And those are things that just never, ever go out of style, you know? Those things aren't fads, and they appeal to me, and they appeal to a lot of younger people because a song with a sentimental lyric will always be relevant. There's no expiration date on a catchy melody in a song with lyrics like these, and I live with that in my heart, and I truly believe in it.
I know it's your goal to tell your own story through the songs, as opposed to recreating the songs in the vision of the original artist. In preparing a new song, I understand that you read the lyrics over and over to inhabit the character of the story that the composer was telling. This is the well-known method used by artists such as Frank Sinatra and Lena Horne. So what does it mean to breathe new life into classic songs or make a classic song your own? And what is that process like for you?
Well, you know, it all starts with the lyrics, and I try to listen as little as possible to the original version or the previous versions of the songs. I really try to understand what the songwriters were feeling when they wrote the song. And I think about how that relates to me or some experience that I had when I might have been feeling that same thing. And then I just try and tell my story using those lyrics, you know. When I started working with Joe Mirioni, he explained to me that, you know, what would set me apart from other singers would be finding my own way to sing these songs, as opposed to just being a cover singer, you know. And I think on the doo-wop circuit in New York and New Jersey especially, there's this focus on recreating the records. And even though Joe was producing those concerts, he knew that that was not the direction for me. And if I wanted to have a career, it wasn't the way to go. So he worked with me on it. And then he introduced me to his friend, like I said before, Clint Holmes, who's a master at this. And once again, my hero. And when it comes to interpreting songs, I know that no one does it better than him. And he's been a mentor to me over the last couple of years and helping me so much to interpret the songs of the 60s and 70s and stuff that's even was only written a couple of years ago.
That's great. Good for you. You're lucky to have such a great support group.
Yes, I feel like I have the dream team around me.
Oh, you do. You certainly do. So many of your arrangements have been orchestrated by Charles Colello, who previously worked with artists such as Frank Sinatra, Barbara Streisand, and Frankie Valli, just to name a few. Charles has more Billboard pop hits than any other arranger in history. That's quite amazing. And as an arranger myself, I know of his work because I used to work with Frank Sinatra. I did Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons when they were on the East Coast. And there's a certain sound, as you know, when you're playing one of his charts, like, oh, that's Charlie's arrangements. So
absolutely.
My God. So what is it like working with Charles Colello and being able to collaborate with him on new arrangements?
Well, he was so easy to collaborate with because he's the nicest guy ever. Again, another man who has had so many big accomplishments and known for so many great things and has absolutely, no big head on him or any kind of attitude. He's just so down to earth and sweet, and he loves going back and forth with ideas. And when you have a really good idea, he gets so excited. And it was just amazing working with him. And our formula to remaking these songs that are on my albums is that Joe and I would fly out to Las Vegas and we'd bring, you know, a handful of songs to Clint Holmes, and we'd go into a studio and Clint would say, you know, how would you sing this song if you were telling the person to put their head on your shoulder and they were just sitting right next to you? And so then I started singing Put Your Head on My Shoulder, for instance, totally like I never sang it before. And we would, you know, make different chord substitutions and change things in the song to make them sound unique. And we would then take the songs back to Florida here and bring them to Charlie and show him what we did. And then Charlie would complete the arrangements and put his touch of magic all over the arrangements, which just made them so lush and beautiful, because a lot of these recordings, there are, you know, 15 horns on, and they're all live instruments, my recordings, and all that stuff was arranged by Charlie, and they just came out so well, and working with Charlie was a dream come true that I didn't know I had, to tell you the truth, but it was just a great experience, and I always love going back into the studio with them, and we will definitely be doing more work together in the future.
Oh, that's great. That's good to hear. How did you meet him? That's got to be very interesting. I'm assuming that Joe knew of him or knew him?
Yes, Joe knew Charlie over the last couple of years, I guess, through some friends of his, and he actually had Charlie write some arrangements for some friends in the business, and then he just one day said, meet me for coffee. And I met him for coffee, and there was sitting Charlie. And at the time, I didn't even, you know who he was yet by face, you know. But of course, I knew the line of work that he did. And he said, "This is Charlie Colello." And we had a long breakfast together, and it was great. It was beautiful. And then from there, one thing led to the other, and then we ended up doing a couple albums together. So that was really cool.
That's incredible. So, after developing your new show in 2021, your second full-length performance was in Las Vegas. The show sold out and received rave reviews, and you have since returned to headline 10 more times. Some singers dream their whole life about playing Las Vegas, and you've done it 11 times in only 2 years. You're only 24 years old. That's amazing. So was this something you dreamed about being a part of your career?
Well, no, it's crazy kind of. It was the furthest thing from my mind, you know. When we developed my show, my full-length show, Joe said, you know, if this show stands up in Vegas, we'll know we have something. So we brought it there 2 years ago, and it was only the second time that I'd ever performed this my 90-minute show live. And, well, it sold out 2 weeks before the show, and I got one standing ovation after another. Thank God.
Beautiful.
And that's when we knew we had something. And I came back, 2 months later, which I thought was too soon, and we sold it out again. And so that was just awesome and, you know, a great, great feeling. And so I always love going back to Vegas because everybody there really appreciates live entertainment, and they especially appreciate people who care about their show, care about telling stories and telling the stories of the songs. Maybe not every singer cares about that, but I feel like the audience really notices that and enjoys it. So that's why I love Vegas.
So in 2021, you released three full-length albums, including I Am Chris Ruggiero, which features arrangements by Charles Colello on such timeless classics as Wouldn't It Be Nice, The More I See You, and My Cherie Amour, as played at the top of today's episode. In 2022, you released the album Christmas with Chris Ruggiero that features a variety of styles of new interpretations of Christmas classics. How did you pick the songs for your Christmas album, and what did you do with each?
Well, I tried to carefully select each song on the album and tried to create each recording with a different flavor or feel. You know, I added a drop of vintage pop, rock and roll, rhythm and blues, soul, jazz, or even a classical take to each one. You know, my goal was that as each song played, people would feel like a kid on Christmas morning rediscovering each song. So each one will feel like unwrapping a gift. You know, you can see the shape and size, but you don't quite know exactly what's inside.
Hmm.
And we did, you know, it's the most wonderful time of the year with a big bombastic arrangement. And we did I'll Be Home for Christmas to sound like a 1960s Four Season record, which is really cool. And I did Silent Night in a very traditional way. And we did Sleigh Ride, which sounds a little like the Phil Spector production of it, but it swings a bit. And I think the only one that might be new to some people is a song called It's Christmas Once Again. And I had the help of Christian Tambor to craft a new version of the song. He's a really incredible arranger and pianist, and he changed the time signature of the song. And it was originally in 4/4, but now it's a waltz feel. So it feels more Christmassy with the waltz, you know, if that's a word, Christmassy. Yeah, why not? So I loved the song before, but his rearranging made me really fall in love with it even more. And the audience seems to like it whenever I do it live. And one of the songs I'm most excited about is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, which is another arrangement by Christian, but we recorded it with a jazz trio, actually, and Wayne Bergeron on trumpet. And Wayne is like the most sought-after trumpet player in the world. He was lead trumpet in Maynard Ferguson's band, and he's played on Ray Charles records, Beyonce records, Paul Anka records, plus like hundreds of major movie and television soundtracks. And when I heard him starting to play on this song, he was using a Harmon mute on the trumpet. And I said, oh man, we definitely got the right man for the job on this one. And I'm honored he agreed to work with me on it, and it sounds beautiful.
Oh, he sounds great on your album. He really does. So speaking of your Christmas album, it also features a duet with Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Darlene Love that landed you and Darlene in Rolling Stone magazine and on Good Morning America, among many others. How did the duet with Darlene Love come about, and what was it like creating a new Christmas classic with her?
Well, Joe brought me this song almost 3 years ago now, and when we first started working together, actually. And, you know, we're always looking for songs that are uplifting and might make a difference in someone's life if they hear it at a time when they need it. But at the time, we just couldn't find a way to take it to another level. And if I'm not going to breathe some new life into a song, there's no reason to record it, you know? So we just kind of put it on the shelf for a little while. And when I met Darlene, she told me that her father was a preacher and that when she sings a Christmas song, it has a much deeper meaning to her. So she told me about singing praise songs and how Christmas for her isn't just about decorations and presents. So growing up Christmas list, is very spiritual and has a real message of love and hope and faith and all the real meanings of Christmas. So we knew it was finally the right time to record it, not only because Darlene would knock it out of the park herself, but I knew Darlene was singing it with me I knew that if she sang it with me, it would inspire me to take it to another level, you know. And I think we've done that. I mean, being in the studio with Darlene was such a great experience, because I felt like by the time I was done with our recording session, I was so much better of a singer. And every line I sang got better as Darlene sang, because I just had to rise to the occasion, because she is such an awesome singer. And it's an honor to collaborate with someone as revered and talented as Darlene. I mean, she sang with Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra. You can't get any higher on the musical food chain than that. And I'm flattered to have her singing on the album, and I'm honored to be her first duet partner since 1995.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
Wow. Well, for my audience, I was very honored to be part of the backup musicians with Chris last December, when you were premiering all your Christmas repertoire and Darlene's duet with you. Although I didn't work with you and Darlene at that point, but you went on to work with her one of the dates with one of her other backing musicians. But it was tremendous. I had a great time. Everyone in the band had a great time playing those great arrangements. And I remember turning on the TV and seeing you and Darlene on Good Morning America. And again, you certainly are an old soul. You can't tell that maybe you were nervous. You carry yourself so great. Unbelievable.
Thank you. I got to tell you, for Good Morning America, something must have not been working inside of me, because I wasn't nervous at all. And I definitely should have been. But I remember we woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning that morning.
Well, there you go.
We had to be. And I had a show the night before, 2 hours away. So I remember I got to the hotel room at 2 o'clock in the morning in New York City, and I had to be up at 4. So I slept for 2 hours. And which is not good for any singer, of course, that has to sing. And we had to do our sound check at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Ugh.
Now, if you sing or if you blow on a horn, you know that nobody's supposed to be singing or playing a horn at 5 o'clock in the morning. So it was tough to do the sound check, but her and I, we made it through it, and we somehow sounded great. I don't know if it was the coffee or the New York bagels that got us through it, but it was so great, and there's absolutely nothing to complain about. It was a beautiful time, and I guess by 8 o'clock we started rolling, which it was live. So that's the only thing I was nervous about, that it was live. But it was okay, because Darlene's a pro, and she knocked it out of the park, and I felt like I had her there as my support, and I was her support. So we took care of each other, and there was really nothing to be nervous about.
And the hosts on that show, they were loving it.
Oh, they were the nicest ever. They were so nice. Michael Strahan and Robin Roberts and George Stephanopoulos. They were the nicest, nicest people. And even after the show, I was actually just going over some of the videos today. Even afterwards, we sat down and just talked for a few minutes. They were so nice. It was awesome.
Oh, you know what? I just realized that gig the night before your taping, for the show, that was a gig I was on with you, because I remember Joe was saying, oh, we got to get out of here. We got to wake up really early. We all wished you luck.
That's right. It was Sellersville, Pennsylvania. And I was just watching the video today. I was singing Christmas Baby, Please Come Home, and you took the sax solo and you played the hell out of it.
Oh, thank you.
So I was watching it, smiling, knowing that I was speaking to you today. That was great.
Oh, that's funny. Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to doing all that stuff again this December, and the gig is coming up in October. Chris, please pick two different musical selections that you've recorded that you feel best represents what you do as a vocalist, so that I can filter into this interview as you speak about them now.
Okay. Well, let's start with Betcha by Golly Wow. Is that all right?
Oh, sure. That's a great song. We love playing that arrangement.
Betcha by Golly Wow was originally recorded by the Stylistics. And it was a really beautiful song that I grew up listening to, and I loved it. And I never thought about recording it, to tell you the truth, because I thought there was no way to make it any better than the original, because it was always so beautiful. And Joe had brought it up and said, let's revisit the song Betcha by Golly Wow, because I had mentioned that I loved it. And next thing you knew, we were in the studio together. And Joe said to me, think of the lyrics when you're singing the song. Betcha by Golly Wow, you're the one that I've been waiting for forever. And even though I still haven't met that person that I've been waiting for it forever. What I did was I thought of what it would be like when I finally meet the person I've been waiting for forever. And I actually began to cry before I started singing the song because of all the things that I was thinking about in my head. And I was, thinking about the place that I would be in, what they'd look like, what they'd be wearing. And I started to do all these things that I worked on with Clint Holmes in the previous years, and they all come naturally now because I've been doing them for a little while. And that's how I sang the song. And I just, I heard the first chord of the song on the piano, and I just sang it like the person was standing in front of me. And that's how I sang the song. And the song really means a lot to me because I'm a lover at heart, you know. I love love songs. I love ballads. And this song is that. And it really takes you to a place emotionally if you allow it to take you there.
There's a spark of magic in your eyes. Candyland appears each time you smile. Never thought that fairy tales came true, but they come true when I'm near you. You're a genie in disguise, full of wonder and surprise. And bet you by
And you have another one as well?
Yeah, One, which was originally a Three Dog Night song by Mr. Nielsen. He wrote it. Actually, his brother comes to some of my shows, believe it or not. He's the nicest guy in the world.
Wow.
He does. He comes to my shows in Florida. But anyway, the song One is not a song that I grew up listening to, but I knew it. And this was Joe's suggestion that we do One. And he said, look at the lyrics, because that's our format. Before I sing a song, I print out the lyrics and I read them over and I write a story that goes with the lyrics. And for this, the song One, it's one's the loneliest number, lonely. The whole song is about being lonely. And what would it feel like to be lonely in a room alone and be alone for so long that the room all of a sudden starts spinning and it turns into a frenzy because you're alone for so long? And that's what this song is about, and that's what I took from this. And that's the arrangement that Charlie Colello built around this, and it goes into three-quarter time, the song, which you'll hear. And it really makes you feel like you're going crazy. But that's exactly what the writer was trying to convey across to the listener when he was writing this song. So that's one of the reasons I love this song. I just think it's a really cool song, and I like singing it because it's got a lot of big notes where I can really puff them out of my chest and, of course, tell the story at the same time.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one, It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. 'Cause one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number. Oh, it's worse than two. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday.
I can attest to what Chris is saying because I'm in the horn section, you know, behind him. And, you know, sometimes we have a couple bars rest here and there. And I'm always looking at the audience, no matter what artist I'm playing behind. And I see the audience, you know, mouthing the words, looking at you. And you can see in their eyes, like you're bringing back great memories for them. And it's something that's touching their heart. So you're doing your job fantastic.
Oh, thank you. And you know, like the greatest compliment I can get is not, you know, you have a great voice or you're saying the high notes. The greatest compliment to me is that, you know, I've heard that song before, but I'd never heard it in that way, and that it took them a few seconds to figure out what song it was, and that they were able to finally understand the story the song was telling, in which they never really knew it before, maybe. So that to me is like the best compliment, and that's what I go for.
Well, that's what makes you an artist. You're an excellent artist. Good for you.
Well, thank you for the compliment. You are as well, and I'm looking forward to doing some more shows with you.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you so much for the kind words. So let me ask you, because everything we do, you know, is serious business and a lot of dedication, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But as you know, being on the bandstand and being backstage, a fair amount of humor, you know, goes on with the music. See right away, you know. So with that, you know, we always have stories to tell. You know, you walk by musicians,
yes,
and say, "Hey, do you have any stories?" And you know, they're throwing it back and forth, and before you know it, it's just breaking the tension and making for a really cool, you know, hang. So do you have any, at least like one funny story to tell about?
I'll tell you, all the funny stories I have, I wouldn't be able to tell on here. And a lot of them, of course, are about Bobby Rydell, and I certainly can't tell those ones. I'd get in trouble. But I mean, so many great stories backstage, and I'm always around, you know, so many comedians back there, you know, not actual comedians, but just like Emil Stukio, the classic.
Oh, they're funny.
He's such a funny guy. And they're always like playing pranks on each other, whether it's, you know, really silly stuff or really serious stuff, like going as far as swapping out shoes inside of duffel bags and putting bricks in there so that they can't lift the bags when they go and put on their suit. I mean, it's crazy. It's always a really good time, especially on the multi-act shows, because a lot of funny stuff happens and there's always pranks being played. So that, it's really fun.
Please share with my audience any upcoming live performances or projects you'd like to announce.
Sure. Well, I'll actually be in Dearborn, Michigan this weekend on Saturday. So that'll be cool. I'll be there with Gary Puckett and Union Gap, which Gary is awesome. I mean, Lady Willpower, Woman, Young Girl, great songs, and the Shades of Blue, who had a hit in the 60s called Oh How Happy, which that was a really cool song, and I'll be there. And then I'll be in Pennsylvania next weekend on Saturday, and then just it keeps rolling on down the line. There's more and more shows coming up, and if they want to find, you know, where my shows are, they can look on my website, chrisruggierosings.com.
I know I'm going to be seeing you with a couple of the other horn players in October and then in December, so looking so forward to doing that.
Same here.
I've read that you reached 60 million people last year on Facebook alone. 60, 6-0.
I feel so lucky. I mean, I don't know what I did to deserve that, but I'm thanking the big man upstairs for that one. I think it's great. You know, Facebook for me is just a way to connect with people and keep in touch. And I'm so happy I'm able to share what I do with everybody and pictures and videos, because I know they're at home watching this stuff, smiling. And I get so many, Scott, I can't even tell you how many messages we get. You know, whether it's on Facebook Messenger or cards in the mail or emails or just Facebook comments alone about how something made their day. You know, a little video they saw of me maybe from a year ago, or something I said today or last week. And I'm so happy to hear that, because unfortunately there's a lot of, you know, hurting people in the world. And it only takes one little thing to change their day or make their day or even change their whole life. And I know that as musicians, all of us help so many people in ways that we don't even know, and we probably never will know.
So speaking about social media, you have your website, of course, you have Facebook, that's, you know, successful as heck. Where else can my listeners find you on social media, and where can they purchase your music?
Well, I'm also on Instagram. They can check me out on Instagram and TikTok as well, and YouTube. And they can listen to my music on, you know, Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, all the streaming platforms that you could possibly imagine. There's probably more than I even know of that my music's on. And if they want to actually get a hard copy of a CD and they're like me and they like listening to it in their car, they can go on my website and they can find all my CDs there. And if they don't have a CD player, I even have USBs now, which are new. The USB, you can plug it into a computer. Even cars have USB ports now, because some don't have the CD players anymore. And they can listen there. So there's a million ways they can find and listen to my music.
To my audience, you really got to check this guy out. Chris Ruggiero really knows his stuff. He's got the whole package. He sounds great. You can see when he sings, he's got a lot of passion. It comes right through. Your outfits are outstanding. My wife keeps telling me she admires the way you look.
Thank you.
And I see how your fans are when they gather around you, you know, at the merch table. People need to find you and listen and watch your videos, and they need to come out live to check you out. You know, you're the real deal, man. You walk the walk and talk the talk.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment, and thank you for having me on here today.
Oh, my pleasure. Again, thank you so much for granting me this time to interview you. And after hearing your stories today, Chris, I'm sure my listeners will all agree that you certainly got chops.
Well, thank you very much, Scott. And I'm looking forward to seeing you soon. And enjoy until then, and have a couple of great shows before we see each other.
Take care now.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for joining me on today's show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation and could hear why my guest got chops. You can follow my podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or Anchor.fm, and stay connected between episodes on Instagram at GotChopsPodcast. Join me on the next episode when we discover why my next guest got chops.